Hey everyone, welcome to episode 59 of Sits and Giggles. I am your host Casey, and I am joined with Krista. How you doing, Krista?
Not too bad, Casey. How about yourself?
Doing pretty good, except for the fact that once again some assholes are starting to infiltrate our fandom. I don't know why I'm saying starting to. They've been here for quite a while.
I was about to say, I think they've been there.
Just, so, did you watch the Dave Filoni monologue that was in episode 2 of the Mandalorian documentary?
Yes. Yes, I did.
It was a great monologue.
It was a phenomenal monologue, and it honestly makes so much sense. If you really think about it.
Right. And it's something that, I mean, I think most of us already knew. Like, we did a whole What If episode on what if Qui-Gon survived. So, like, it's not that we didn't already know it, but the way he talked about it was just so eloquent and so beautiful. And even if it was something you already knew, it still made you look at the duel at the end of Phantom Menace in a whole new light. And I would say that all of the directors at the table seemed pretty enthralled by what he was saying too.
Yeah.
But since we can't have nice things, you have to have the people who come along saying, well, if you don't understand that, then you just don't know basic storytelling. And it's like, motherfucker, like, would you look at Deborah Chow and say, you don't understand basic storytelling? Would you say that to Bryce Dallas Howard? No. So, like, why are you saying it to fans who are just really excited about something that there's no reason whatsoever to be a dick about?
Like, It literally falls back under the category of gatekeeping. You have all of these fanboys out there who, you know, have somehow come up with this as another measuring stick contest with other fans, where they're treating people who, like, yeah, maybe they just enjoy it for what it is on its surface, and they don't have to know, you know, that the fact that this fight is a pinnacle moment for the saga. Like, they don't need to know that information to know, other than to know, like, oh, him losing is kind of a big deal. And for them to also be like, oh shit, it's awesome. They don't have to fully think it through if they don't want to. Or, you know, if it just doesn't cross their mind, that doesn't make them any less of a fan.
No, it doesn't. And even, like, if you just watch the fight and you're like, that's a cool lightsaber fight. It's fast and there's a lot of cool flips. Like, that's cool too. Like, there's no wrong way to enjoy a Star Wars movie. Other than enjoying it to be a dick. That's the only wrong way to enjoy a Star Wars movie.
Or to enjoy to hate watch it. Or to hate whatever it is. Book, comic, video game. You can't call yourself a fan if you're going to watch it solely for the purpose of, you know, going in, I want to hate this movie. Then yes, you're going to hate the movie. If you walk in with the predisposition notion that you are going to dislike it right off the bat, and you don't give it a chance, obviously you're going to dislike it. At that point, your mind's made up. You're not going to change your mind.
Well, that was the difficult stuff that we had to talk about. We've got some fun stuff.
We do.
Today is we're recording this on Tuesday, so May 19th is it's the 20th anniversary, not the 20th, it's the 15th anniversary of the release of Revenge of the Sith. It's the 40th anniversary of the release of Empire Strikes Back. It's all not, and this isn't like, not that this is a milestone, but it's the 21st anniversary of the release of Phantom Menace. The Phantom Menace is now old enough to buy a beer. Last week.
Correct. It deserves it. Yeah, after all of the shit it deals
does,
with.
It deserves to have a drink. And then last week was the, I don't know, 12th, 13th anniversary of Attack of the Clones. So, like, we're in May, you know, before Disney started doing the Christmas releases, May was a big month for Star Wars. So we're hitting a lot of anniversaries last week and this week. Revenge of the Sith is the one I've been thinking about the most, just because, like, we're coming off that Siege of Mandalore arc, so I've been thinking about that movie a lot lately.
And not to mention, me and you have seen our it pop up probably for that same reason in our timelines a few times, where we've seen, you know, shitty comments that we'll then, you know, discuss amongst ourselves in text.
Yeah. And some fun memes.
What?
And some fun memes.
Oh, and yes, some very, very funny memes.
I have probably seen more high ground memes in the past week than I have for all the other memes for all the other movies combined.
Oh, because there's never, you can, like, you can't do, the high ground memes are just, they are truly, they're great. They're up there with the sand ones. Like, say what you will about the prequels and about Hayden Christensen as Anakin Skywalker, but man, we got some quality memes.
I think the marshmallow one was my favorite.
Yeah, that was great.
If you haven't seen that, I think I retweeted it last week. I'll try to find it and retweet it again. It was quality.
What was it? I'm pulling up our text thread right now. I'm just taking a gander to see if there was any other really, really brilliant ones.
Well, there was the one where Ewan McGregor had the mountain was named after Kenobi, so now, like, he is the high ground.
Oh yes, there was that one. There was the Anakin Skywalker.
That was, at first, okay, so, like, I first got that text on my watch. So, like, when I first saw the picture, I thought you were sending me another one of those, like, really shitty, like, High Republic, like, redos on the art.
Oh.
So I'm like, oh, man, it's another one. And then, like, I open it, and it's, like, I don't know whose legs they were. It was like Arnold Schwarzenegger's legs, like, photoshopped on the Anakin's, like, lower body, and it was Anakin Skywalker. Like, that was quality.
Yeah, that was great. That was truly great. Unrelated to Star Wars, but I just stumbled a reply of the one I sent you of a picture of somebody said they cooked steak, mushroom, and homemade fries. Nothing is cooked. Everything is raw.
I saw that one. Even the fries were raw.
Yeah, but so I just stumbled upon our exchange where I sent that to you, and then you sent a reply. And it says, "What did you cook it with? A glow stick?" That's great. It's great. Absolutely fantastic.
We have quality texting times together throughout the day.
We do. We have little spurts. One of us sees something funny, it immediately gets shared to the other person. The Revenge of the Sith is a good film, damn it.
It's...
Stand by that.
Oh, I will stand by that too.
It is by far, in my opinion, the best and my favorite of the prequels, which is saying something, because as a kid it used to be Attack of the Clones. Don't judge me.
You know what, like,
I was a big fan of that as a kid. I loved the battle on Geonosis with all of the Jedi. They whip off their cloaks and they ignite their lightsabers. It was hype.
There was a time where, like, I might have been like, really? like 10, 15 years ago, I might have judged you on that. But now, like, I'm not going to judge you on that. If that was your favorite movie, own it. Like, that's awesome.
As a kid, it most definitely was. It probably was up until about midway through high school, I want to say. And then I really just started to really like Revenge of the Sith. I honestly never hated the prequels. I can say that and be truthful. Of any of them that I like, and I refused to watch, so to speak, for the longest time, I would skip The Phantom Menace every single time. I would. But that was the only one. And that stopped. Because they aren't terrible.
I could appreciate them now. Like, I like them. I really liked them when they came out. I went through, like, my little phase where I was really contrarian about them.
I can't hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Nope.
Damn it. Hold on. Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yep.
Okay. So apparently I have to play this game where midway through the podcast, I have to switch the USB ports that my mic goes into. Don't know why. It's not a fun game, but it's a game I have to play. Anyways.
Especially when one person is deaf.
That is just like fate playing a cruel joke on you. I'm sorry.
You aren't wrong.
So like, I really loved the prequels when they came out. Like, I saw each of them multiple times in the theater. And I mean, I told you how, like, I bought the Iraqi bootleg of Revenge of the Sith, and I watched it, like, every day in Iraq. You can't judge me for that. If you do, you don't support the troops.
Support the troops.
So, like, and then, like, yeah, I went through my phase where I was, you know, a contrarian bastard about them. And, like, I regret that. It was such a waste of time. It was such a waste of time. And, like, I came back to loving them again. And
I want to say that, for me, at least, like, and I don't know about you, I think we might have discussed it, and it might be a similar case, but I can say with 100% certainty that the only reason I started to, you know, talk shit, I guess, if you want to say, on the prequel trilogy is because I love them, but my brother-in-law did it. He was the one who got me into Star Wars. So as I got older, and he kept being like, yeah, you don't want to watch those ones are the worst ones, like, eventually you do pick up on that, and then I go, you know what, you interact with friends and stuff and who are Star Wars fans, and you get the same, oh, the prequels are terrible, blah blah blah. So then, yeah, it becomes easier to just be like, oh yeah, I hate them too, and then eventually you convince yourself that you actually do hate them and that there's legitimate reasons to hate them, when in reality You're following the herd of sheep.
And I've noticed, like, you know, of course, it's been long enough now that, like, the people who grew up with the prequels are well into adulthood. Like, yeah, exactly, you. And, like, you know, like, they're on social media, of course, because they're not kids, and I follow them, and, like, I get, so, like, every day, my timeline is filled with, like, because I follow a lot of, like, Star Wars accounts. It's pretty much, like, 90% of my timeline now. So, like, every day my timeline gets filled with, like, prequel appreciation. So, like, just the way that, like, negativity towards the prequels, like, affected us and how we, like, looked at them, like, that prequel appreciation is also affecting me, because it's not just like oh, prequels good. It's like every day, like, my timeline is, I see, like, at least one, like, thread that's like a really good analysis of why one aspect of the prequels is, you know, a really, like, well thought out thing. And I like that. I appreciate that.
Yeah, to kind of, so, like, I was 6 years old when The Phantom Menace came out. Or, because what, it probably came out in May?
May 99, yeah. May 19th, 1999.
Today, yeah, we just discussed this. So technically I was five. I was turning six. But the fact remains is I remember being little and going into one of those old time, they definitely don't exist anymore, home theater system stores where like it had everything you could want to make a home theater back in the early 2000s. And in it, they had rooms set up to like you could see, oh, check out this big screen TV and this surround sound system and all that kind of stuff. And I remember being there with my parents, and because I was bored, they just put me in the room where a movie was playing, and it just so happened to be episode one of The Phantom Menace. And we were there for probably a good hour and a half, maybe. Like, that stuff took forever, I swear, as a kid. And for the entire time, I just sat there and watched The Phantom Menace. And when it was time to go, the movie still wasn't over. And I flat out refused to leave until I could finish watching that movie because I was so enamored with it. And that honestly probably was the first time I had seen a Star Wars film ever. And then that kicked it off with my brother-in-law being, you know, a Star Wars fan, him being like, oh, you liked that. Like, okay, now let's watch all of these and getting me into it and everything. But yeah, like the goal of The Phantom Menace by Lucasfilm was, you know, to make kids fans. And he definitely achieved that, at least with me. So I don't know how anybody can say that they were pointless or they didn't work or they weren't good, because The Phantom Menace and the rest of the prequel trilogy created and brought so many new people to the Star Wars fandom that honestly without would probably have eventually died out or dwindled a lot.
And that's something that like Filoni hits on in that documentary, because he ends it by saying how, you know, George Lucas says, always remember to make these stories hopeful because kids need that. And like these stories are made for kids. And I think that a lot of people who want to hate on Star Wars miss that point. Like, I think that, you know, they hate on it because maybe it's like not dark enough or it's not like, you know,
Filoni mentioned with Anakin and how there are people who are upset that he wasn't dark enough, or that Luke, you know, the whole notion that he could turn to the dark or couldn't he? And Filoni touches upon it, and it's like everybody is driven, can be driven to do horrible things. But he argues that fundamentally, at your core, you want to be a good person.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know where I was going with that. I had a point and then I lost it.
That's why, like, they're not totally dark. Like, he's not Anakin. I mean, obviously Anakin becomes evil when he's Darth Vader, but like he doesn't spend the entire prequels like showing Anakin being evil. Like he gives kids that like he gives them that hope that Anakin can be redeemed again and Anakin can come back from, you know, where he falls to.
And in order to be redeemed, you at least you have redemption at its, you know, the definition is to go back to what you previously were in this instance. So in order for him to be redeemed, he had to have been a good person at some point.
Right. And these movies, so, I mean, like, and that's another, it annoys me when people pine for like an R-rated Star Wars movie. And it's like, you're completely missing the point of what these movies are and who these movies are for.
And to be fair, we saw that they can very easily do something that is much more adult skewed, I want to say. Right. Or like the audience for it is largely they're basing it for adults, and have it A, not be rated R, and B, still make it compelling watching, and I hate to say it, an adult Star Wars show, so to speak.
Right. Like, I think
you see it with the Mandalorian. That's the example right there.
Yeah, or Rogue One. I think Rogue One. A good yes. example. But they're still made in a way, like you don't have to put the kids to bed before you watch those. Like maybe, I don't know, maybe Rogue One is a little intense for kids at the end. I don't know. But like,
I mean, I feel like at that point, it's kind of like up to your discretion almost. Like yeah. My nephews both watched Rogue One at a relatively young age. But at the same time, I guess my counter argument is we see some pretty dark stuff in the Clone Wars, or some pretty heavy arcs. And while the Clone Wars is definitely geared towards kids, it's almost like, well, you just took it to a really messed up place on a kids show.
Yeah. Well, I mean, think about all of the things that we watched as kids or read as kids.
Like Courage the Cowardly Dog.
Okay, I've never watched that.
But at the end of season one, his owners die, and it shows him making puppets out of them. And then it's basically implied throughout the rest of the show, this is like he's gone insane, and it's just him and these dead puppets.
That's dark. A kid's show. That's dark.
It's so messed up.
Well, I was thinking, Lion King.
Oh, yes.
Bambi.
Bambi's mom.
Harry Potter.
Yes.
First chapter, we learn that, the bad guy commits a double homicide and then, tries to murder a child. So,
I was in first grade when I read that book for the first time. So,
kids are confronted with dark things from a pretty young age just from, the kids' entertainment that they're consuming.
Let's be honest, kids are confronted with some pretty dark shit on a daily basis when they have to do in-school shooting drills. Let's not act like today's kids aren't seeing horrific things every day when they turn on the news and nobody bats an eye.
I remember the first time my daughter had to go through an active shooter drill. First, it made me extremely sad, but then, it made me so, pissed off that she had to go through that. Because, you've met her. Does she deserve to, have that bullshit in her life?
No, your daughter is one of, the most sweetest, pure, to me, your daughter is literally, she's a genuine kid.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell she's unbothered, or not really unbothered, but this is a terrible word to use, but untainted yet by the world.
Right. And she's starting to, she's not losing that right now, but you can tell the virus is affecting her and it's making her deal with things that she's never had to deal with before. And she's having trouble processing some of those emotions. Last week, before I tell you this story, I gotta tell you my daughter is 5 years old. She's kind of an immature five, so she probably is a 4 year old. Okay, so keep that in mind, listeners, as I tell this story. Please don't call the police on me. So she wants to go. She wanted to go to a playground, or she wanted to go to a friend's house or something. And we were like, well, no, you can't do that because of the virus. And we were we've been telling her the governor won't let her go anywhere. She understands that, and she's so we won't let her go to the playground. And she's I know, we'll kill the governor. And I'm like, No, that's not how you process that emotion. That's not how we solve our problems at all.
Oh.
But, like, it's a dark thing that, like, she's having the process right now. So, like, yeah, like, a kid can handle a Star Wars movie because they've been handling dark stuff their entire lives.
It was actually, you know, when you talk about how, like, the pandemic is affecting her and how she processes things with it, my mom pointed out a really good point that my generation, we're screwed. Like, no wonder so many of us have, you know, suffer from anxiety and depression and everything. Like, look at all of the stuff that in my 27 years of living, I have lived through. The countless recessions, 9/11, the rise and peak of mass shootings. I mean,
I think I was a junior, maybe a sophomore, but I think I was a junior when Columbine happened. And that was like, I mean, it wasn't the first school shooting, but that was like, I think that that's the one that probably affected like the national consciousness the most.
Yeah.
So like, I'm like a young adult as I'm starting to process that, like, she doesn't even, like, that's just, like, she's born into, like, this messed up situation.
I was 5 when Columbine happened.
I hate comparing our ages, but go on.
So, like, I can kind of, I mean, I don't remember it really, but, like, I remember as a kid being very confused why all of a sudden, like, Why did we have to have, you know, backpacks that you can see through and that kind of stuff? Like, why all of a sudden there were now a lot more rules at school and things like that? And, you know, being really confused about that and all of the meetings for a while that we had, like, assemblies and stuff like that, and just not really understanding it. Because as a little kid, how do you process that kind of stuff? Like, when all of a sudden something happens like that, my sisters were in high school at that point. So, like, obviously then my parents are super, you know, super scared because, oh, what if it happened at their school? What if that was one of my sisters or something like that? So being a little kid and watching all of this stuff unfold has to be at times downright terrifying.
Yeah, agreed. Okay, so we got way off topic on Star Wars.
Really off topic. Holy shit.
Let's end this with a fun topic.
Yes.
So we have a thread to talk about on Twitter. It's a Padme thread. So one of the people that we follow, Sarah Demp, I don't think that's her full last name, but she doesn't have her last name on Twitter, so I'm not going to like advertise it. But she did a ranking of every, like, costume that Padme ever wore. So the criteria, Natalie Portman had to be the person to wear the costume. It had to be live-action movies only. She said one day she'll do a Clone Wars rewatch and rank those costumes, and cutscenes were allowed. So she came up with those criteria, she came up with 36 Padme costumes. All right, number 36 was the hospital gown that she wore giving birth to Luke and Leia. Which, so she says it's a basic boring sack, but it meets all the criteria, so I have to include it. Also, I'm still salty about how Padme died, so this is rightfully at the bottom of the list.
As one should be.
Now, I did know this. I've never noticed this before until this picture, but I'm really getting like a Leia New Hope vibe from that gown. And that made me appreciate it just a little bit, but I agree, basic and boring. Next was the Coruscant nightgown from Attack of the Clones. Again, it's like pretty basic and boring. It's the one. All of
these I hate it. These nightgowns. First off, nothing in a million years would seem comfortable about sleeping in a nightgown. Like, who wants to sleep in a dress? No one. I don't care who you are. But it basically just reminds me of, like, this, what people wore, like, in the medieval times. Like, if you think about, I don't know if anybody has seen it who might be listening, the Tudors, like, what they wear as, like, their undergarments, like, their undershirt is, like, it's this kind of stuff. And I'm like, right. Why?
And I think that's what George Lucas is going for.
100%.
Like, yeah, I mean, he's going for like that royal bureaucrat type of look with her. Number 34 was the blue linen dress that she wears in Revenge of the Sith. It was in one of the scenes with. Oh, it was in the scene with Anakin where she has the line, "So love has blinded you."
Yes.
This one, okay, it's the first one on the list that's not a nightgown. Just like the look of it, it's very dark. It looks like something that you might wear to a funeral. So, like, it just kind of, it fits with, like, the darker theme of the movies. And it's a, or this movie, and it's like a kind of a foreshadow on where her character's going to end up.
Yeah. Without the Shaw, it's less, excuse me, it's less funeral-y, but with it, it is. And I do like that Sarah points out, too, that it's a matronly appearance, and that it's a, she says, a sad theme to all of her Revenge of the Sith outfits. And I will say, like, George Lucas, they had a clear vision of what her wardrobe was for each movie, and they stuck to it. I mean, in the Phantom of the Menace, I would say is the one that she probably has. Sorry, my speech impediment is kicking out there, and I can't help it.
It's okay.
So I'm not going to try again. But that's the only film that you kind of see a variety. Like, yes, you have the real heavy, you know, laden gowns that she wears when she's, you know, acting as the official queen. But we see her in a variety of different looks. In Attack of the Clones, he really leans all into, like, I'm going to try to make her as sexy and, like, physically attractive as possible with her, like, her with her, the wardrobe choices. And I believe to recall Natalie Portman even saying, like, it was really funny in episode one she was covered the entire time, and then she gets to episode two and they're stripping her down more. And then in episode three you find out she's pregnant, and oh, let's cover everything back up, and now you gotta look like a mom or you gotta look like an old lady, and it bothers me a little bit.
Next, we have the dressing gown from Revenge of the Sith. This is what she's wearing when she speaks to Obi-Wan after Anakin's fall. This one, I think that this is the... She looks pregnant in this one. Like, so this is not an outfit that she's wearing that's designed to, like, hide the baby bump. It does not... I can't tell if... You know what? It looks incredibly soft. The purple part kind of looks like velvety and scratchy, but then like I don't know what you would call that. The coat part of it looks really like soft and cozy.
Yeah, I mean, but like the purple under part looks like it could even like be like silk material.
It does, yeah.
So then, like, super comfy, probably. I wouldn't know. I don't own anything silk. I don't think I would ever really want to wear anything silk either, to be honest, though. I'll stick to cotton.
But it's just like, it's another one of those Revenge of the Sith ones where it's shapeless. I do like the cool metal-looking hair thing that she has on top of her head. Next up, number 32, I think that this is from Revenge of the Sith. I think it's the cloak that she's wearing whenever Anakin returns from saving the Chancellor. And she's got some very, like, Leia-esque buns.
She does.
Again, very dark, very shapeless. This, I think this was an outfit that was, like, specifically designed to, like, hide her pregnancy. It's really...
I'm curious to, just to know, when at what point did she just decide to stop giving a fuck about hiding it? Because she does at some point. You can clearly see that she stops giving a fuck about hiding it.
When the Jedi are gone and they can't punish Anakin for getting her pregnant now. Because she's not hiding it when she's talking to Obi-Wan. She's like, oh yeah, I'm pregnant.
Yeah, but also in the one... that's a really good point. I don't know.
This one looks very warm. Like, this one looks like something that you would want to wear in, like, February.
Yeah.
All right, number 31. It's one of her queen outfits from Phantom Menace. It's what she's wearing on the Return to Naboo. She's got, like, the silky, like, purple headdress. She's got the white makeup, and she has, like, a purple velvety gown. Velvet is, like... big theme in these dresses that we're seeing so far.
Indeed.
The thing I like about the way she looks as queen, it's like very, I mean, it's like as much for like security as it is for her looks, because like she could easily like change out with one of her handmaidens.
Yeah.
Number 30 is the Veranda gown from Revenge of the Sith. I think she was wearing this after Anakin had his nightmare. So I guess this is something that she's supposed to be sleeping in. Does not look like something I'd want to sleep in.
Again, who would sleep in this?
Is this how rich people sleep?
I don't know.
And I'm sorry, but no one's hair looks like that when they sleep.
No, like, she's got some, what, intricate ass braids all up at the top, like... Yeah, you can sleep in braids, and if you have curly hair, it's going to, you know, be better than if it was straight, I guess. But regardless... not likely or realistic.
All right, number 29 is what she was wearing on Mustafar. It's more military-esque. I think, and it definitely does not hide her pregnancy, and she's got this, like, leather thing, like, this leather, like...
literally, like, accentuates it.
Yeah, it does. And then she's got, it's like a short sleeve top, but then she's got like the full like arm sleeves, kind of like what, it actually looks very like Rey-esque, like yeah. Arm sleeves.
I will agree with you on that, yes.
I like this outfit. I don't like the color of the pants. The color doesn't do it for me though.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. In the weird...
like a very like aqua seafoam green.
Yeah. It's just, as you know, Sarah says, it's executed poorly. It had potential.
Number 28, the Revelation gown from Revenge of the Sith. I think I think she's wearing this after Anakin returns from the temple. Again, very velvety, more purple. She's got like a, she does have a cool like head dress thing with it that I like. And she's got some like silver like intertwined with her braids. It's neat.
Again, the hair saves it.
It's another one that looks like you would want to wear like in February if you live somewhere where it's cold.
It kind of just reminds me of like I don't know, like an old-timey, like 1700s, what like the rich would wear as like a winter outfit.
You know, it remind some of these outfits kind of looked very like Game of Thronesy, like something that like maybe Dany was wearing when she got to Winterfell, or something that like Sansa would wear.
Yes, I agree.
All right, number 27 is her gown from the her final appearance in the Senate. This is what she's wearing when she says, "This is how liberty dies," with thunderous applause.
Greatest line in Star Wars.
I think it's a really, it's a neat contrast to what Palpatine is wearing in this scene, because I remember he would have that red like gown thing with like the puffy sleeves, and this is like a darker purple. She also has like the puffy sleeves going on.
I do like the continued theme of dressing her in purple, because purple historically was always this like the color of royalty. So I do like that they continuously go back and put Padme in purple, because she is still a queen.
Yeah. And it has like, I don't know if like George Lucas considered this or not in choosing. I don't, first of all, I don't even know if George Lucas chose the colors. I don't know if like George Lucas had any say in what she looked like. So like, if I'm taking credit away from like the costume department, I'm sorry. But like, I know like purple is like an important like color in like Christianity too. Like it's the color of like Jesus. So I don't know if that has anything to do with the purple of her, because she's going to give birth to like the saviors. I don't know. Let's get away from that.
Well, now all I can remember is the thing you texted me about the communion.
Oh, my. Okay. Number 26. The peacock gown from Revenge of the Sith. I don't remember this. Oh, okay. It was cut from the film. That's why I don't remember it.
I will say I don't hate it, but I absolutely hate the like weird bead dreads headpiece thing she's got going on.
When was she gonna have time to get like braids like that? And then,
well,
like,
obviously it's a wig.
Oh yeah. Like,
but like,
is that like during the, like great, were we supposed to take a, like obviously it's like a wig for her. Like, were we supposed to assume it was a wig for Padme too?
Probably.
This looks uncomfortable.
Looks like you really couldn't sit in it.
No. It looks very stiff.
Yes. Kind of. It reminds me of Palpatine a little bit.
Kind of glad that one got cut from the film.
Yes.
Okay, number 25. It's another one from The Phantom Menace. It's the black gown. She's got the white face. This is what she's wearing when her hair is like the two. I don't know how you would describe her hair in this picture.
They look like elbow macaroni.
Yes. I think this may have been what she was wearing when she called for the vote of no confidence in the Senate. Very regal. Again, like it's the Phantom Menace, so it's as much about like her, like, personal security as it is about her looks. Like, she could easily switch out with, like, Sabe in this outfit.
Like, Casey, her hair here probably is, like, a wig piece and stuff.
Right. Okay, number 24, it's what she's... Okay, this was cut from the movie. This is from Attack of the Clones. It's what she's wearing during the visit home to her parents' house. It's very... So she... Okay, so, like, Sarah points out that it's a midriff, and it's, like... It's not even, like, mid. This is, like, a high riff. Like...
This literally just comes right to the bottom of her boobs, and that is it. That is it.
Who would wear that, like, to a family dinner?
Apparently people in Naboo.
They're very artsy. They're probably very free-spirited. There is a, she also has a cloak on. In one of the pictures. The cloak, again, this is, like, very, like, reminiscent of, like, Game of Thrones. Like, it's almost, like, exactly what Dany was wearing in Winterfell.
Similar.
I like her hair. In these pictures.
Yeah. Everything about it, as, you know, Sarah says, kind of just screams to early 2000s.
Yeah.
To me, like, it's a costume that does not hold up. Like, you can't look at it and be like, yeah, it's for, you know, basically a space soap opera. Like, and so, yeah, it still holds up. No, this is like, even in this, in that context, it just doesn't hold up.
No. Okay, number 23, they're on the Lara's homestead in Attack of the Clones, and she's wearing a white costume again with the midriff showing. It's kind of, I don't know, like, in a way, it's kind of creepy. Like, we've talked about how, like, in the first seasons of Attack of the Clones, it was kind of, like, creepy how they kept putting, like, Ahsoka in, like, midriff tube tops.
Yep.
Like, it's kind of like the same thing here. Like, I wonder if Natalie Portman, like, felt comfortable, like, showing that much skin.
I mean, she has abs, though. Like, that's impressive as shit.
She does. Like, she's ripped.
She looks great in it. But, yeah.
It's another... Anytime I see... someone in Star Wars in a white gown, it just reminds me of Leia. Like, I don't think that you can put someone in a white gown and not expect people to think of Leia.
Oh, 100%.
All right, number 22, the blue sunburst outfit from Attack of the Clones. I don't remember this. It's very... I kind of wonder if she's sleeping in this now. I don't know if this is supposed to be a nightgown. I don't remember when she was wearing this at all. It looks very casual.
No remembrance of it.
It looks like something that, like, you would wear the Coachella.
Yes.
Number 21, the Aqua nightgown from Revenge of the Sith. I don't remember where this was in the movie. She's crying to C-3PO. I think this is when she's, like, seeing the Jedi Temple burning. Again, like, okay, so this one looks comfortable. Still doesn't really look like something you would want to sleep in. And she's got, like, the Rey-esque arm sleeves again.
Which, I just don't believe that they could really stay up on your arm that secure. They just wouldn't slowly fall down.
I don't know. I've never worn them.
Neither have I.
Maybe one day I'll wear some and I'll test it out and I'll get back to you.
Okay.
I don't like the color. That's an ugly color.
Yeah, it's not a great color. I love the screen cap of her crying to C-3PO because you can't see him, but you know his face. And just because it's his face, you know, he just looks like...
Oh, my.
Like, oh, God.
Number 20, the refugee outfit from Attack of the Clones. I don't know what refugees look like in the Star Wars universe, but she's... looks like a rich refugee, maybe fleeing from, like, a rich country. I don't know. That's... it's like a mustard-colored gown that's bell-shaped. Does not look comfortable. I don't know how she's sitting in it.
I love that her and Anakin are kind of color-coordinated.
He's just like, I'll throw on a poncho.
I mean, yeah, but like his collar, like he's got the pattern on like what looks like the collar, and then he's got the darker covered scarf type thing.
His is very, like, his look is very Western.
100%.
Matter of fact, you know what this reminds me of? Like, you know how like you see in Westerns where like you've got the gruff cowboy and they're like escorting like the matronly looking woman who's like in the high neck, like black gown, and like she's showing no skin. What, like, that's what it kind of reminds me of.
Yes, I can see that.
Number 19, the outfit that she wears on Tatooine in The Phantom Menace. This was like the height of my Natalie Portman crush.
What are the sleeves?
It looks like she's wearing like hand-me-down clothes that don't fit her.
And then used duct tape on the sleeves.
I don't know. I don't have any. I got nothing.
When we get to it, I'll show you what was like my peak. Like what? So for you, that was like the height of it for you?
Yeah.
I'll show you what it was for me when we get to it.
Okay, number 18 is the outfit she's wearing on Geonosis, which is, I think this is my favorite Padme outfit.
What a coincidence, as it is for me.
Oh, was this the peak of your Padme crush?
No.
Oh, okay.
That was an episode one.
Okay. And this is going to turn...
fantastic.
This is going to turn into a midriff shirt eventually through the movie. I like the cape. The cape looks very, it's like almost like sheepskin or something. I don't know. Again, it looks like something you would wear.
Sherpa.
Looks like something you would wear if it's very cold. Looks very military-esque. And I like the boots. And they, again, keeping with like that cold theme, they kind of almost look like military-esque, like snow boots.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of this outfit. Yeah. It is definitely my favorite Padme outfit. It reminds me a lot of Leia's Hoth outfit.
Yeah.
I like her hair. I like the way the braids are done. I don't know, everything about this. This is just my favorite Padme look in Star Wars, for sure.
Right, number 17, Dinner with Anakin in Attack of the Clones. This is what she's wearing when like he floats the peach over to her. Very formal. In the first picture, she's got like a feathery, like, tube top sort of thing. And then in the next one, she doesn't have that, and she's wearing like a leather corset with like the leather arm sleeve things. And the dress looks very, like, almost reptilian to me.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of this one.
Not a fan?
No.
Number 16 is the pilot disguise from Attack of the Clones in the beginning. It's cool. I mean, it's very military looking. She's got like the leather top with, I mean, she looks like she's disguised as a pilot. Looks badass.
We knew that she could handle herself, she could fly, so like it's,
yeah,
not just the costume.
All right, number 15. Okay, this is what she was wearing in the Senate when she called for the vote of no confidence. This one doesn't do anything for me. It looks like she's wearing something that like my grandma used to knit, these like white like doily things when I was a kid, and it looks like that's what she has on her head. And she has a very, like, Roman-esque, like, headdress on.
Yeah. This one just kind of, like, and then the actual dress part of it just reminds me of a napkin. Like, a cloth napkin with, like, a white holder around it.
Right. You're right. She looks like a napkin. 14, the wedding dress from Attack of the Clones. Again, like, the white thing reminds me of, like, the doilies my grandma used to knit or sew, like, when I was a kid. So it doesn't do much for me.
Yeah. If you got rid of the doily on the head, it would be a great look.
This is what you would wear if you're getting married, like, in secret.
100%.
13, the packing dress from Attack of the Clones. This is what she's wearing whenever they're about to leave as refugees. Lot going on with this one. This is very regal, and she's got they're not Leia-esque buns, but they're something that is going to eventually, like, evolve into the Leia buns.
Velveeta mac and cheese shells.
Yeah, you're right.
I feel terrible, I'm sorry, but if it looks like a noodle, I'm gonna say it looks like a noodle.
I mean, I don't know how else to describe them, so yeah, they're noodles. Okay, 12 is the green robe from Revenge of the Sith. I don't remember. This is from a cutscene. This would have been like the birth of the rebellion, is what's going on here. She's wearing something again. It's kind of like gold and velvety, and she has like a purple sash going around her chest. This looks like, I mean, it's less elegant, and it kind of goes with what is going on with the movie at this point, because I'm pretty sure this would have been after the Republic fell and the Empire started to form. All right, number 11. This is one of, like, the most underrated Padme outfits, in my opinion. It's the flame handmaiden outfits from The Phantom Menace.
I agree 100%.
Yeah, it has, like, the ombre dye job, and it just, whenever I think of, like, the handmaidens, this is immediately what I think of.
Yep.
Right.
This is still not the Phantom Menace outfit, though. That was, like...
Right. We're in the top 10 now, so we've got the Senate dress from Attack of the Clones. It was left on the cutting room floor. She's got the Velveeta mac and cheese buns again. Again, very purple, very bell-shaped. It's got like a gold dress with like a velvety purple like overcoat, and it's looks uncomfortable. Looks like you can't sit in it. It's a lot, but she looks incredible. All right, number 9, it's the nightgown and blue robe from Attack of the Clones. I don't remember when she's wearing this in the movie. So she's got a royal blue robe, and it looks like it's might be knit. This looks like something I own, like a sweater that kind of has a pattern like that, and I'm afraid to wear it because I'm afraid I'm gonna ruin it. Are you muted? You're muted.
No, like that one actually looks like something that I could feasibly see someone wearing in the Star Wars universe prior to going to bed.
Right, so, like, she's got the nightgown underneath, and that's, like, her, like, robe. I can see that. That makes sense.
And the hair's not ridiculous.
No. No, not at all. Okay, number eight, the parade gown from The Phantom Menace. This is at the end of the movie. It's very feathery, and she's got like a white kind of, it kind of reminds me of kind of like, I don't know, you know, like in medieval art, you'd have like the angels, and they have like the white like halo thing going around the back of their heads.
Yep.
That's what it reminded me. Very angelic.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm guessing this is not the Phantom Menace outfit, right? Okay.
No. Okay. It's number four.
Number four, okay. So number seven, the Loyalist Committee from Attack of the Clones. Again, continuing with that purple theme, and she's got, like, would you call that a choker? Is it a choker if it's that thick?
I would think so.
Okay. And then she has the biggest, like, hair bun that you can possibly imagine. And it's kind of, like, framed.
It feels so heavy.
I would imagine so. But it looks cool. Like, if you're going for a cool look and you don't care, like, how, like, you don't care about neck problems, like, you nailed it right
Padme
there.
Had to have some wild neck muscles after all of the weird-ass headpieces she's worn.
I would imagine.
Ain't no concussions for her.
She's had, like, yeah, she's had, like, 10 pounds of, like, hair on her head for these movies. Number six is the red throne gown. So when I think of the Phantom Menace, like, this is the gown. When I think of Padme, this is, like, the look I'm thinking of.
Yes, I agree with that.
It's the red gown. It's got the really elaborate, like, headdress and the... Okay, so what kind of pasta would you call that hair? Penne?
Yeah.
And it's got the white makeup with the red lips. Like, this is, if you close your eyes and you think of Padme and the Phantom Menace, I'm sure this is the look you think of. All right, number five, the water gown, her funeral gown from Revenge of the Sith. It's very sad.
Man. One of my favorite things that I think is highly underrated is the fact that, like, almost. Someone took the time to make sure that thing that Anakin carved for her was in her hands for this funeral. And I think that's a very low-key, like, super touching moment.
It is. It's sad.
I would like to know who did that. To be honest, it would be neat to know who did that.
I would guess Sabe.
I agree with that. That's a good guess.
Number four, the battle handmaiden from the Phantom Menace. That's what she's wearing when they're storming the palace. This is, yeah.
Yep.
This is probably the other look I most associate with Padme from the Phantom Menace.
Yep. All
right, we're in the top three. Number three is the lake dress from Attack of the Clones. This is where she's being told that Anakin does not like sand.
I hate this dress hair combo type. It's always bothered me. I've never liked this look.
The thing that, like, and this is probably like my OCD kicking in, but, like, I don't like walking on, like, what I'm wearing. Like, I can't wear, like, baggy jeans because I don't want to, like, step on it with my heels or anything. Like, I can't imagine, like, this dress not driving me crazy if I were wearing it.
So, joggers and skinny jeans better never go out of style, because now I don't know what to do when I have normal, like, width bottoms to my pants with all that extra room at the ankles. It bothers me.
Yeah.
So I feel your pain.
Number two, the picnic dress from Attack of the Clones. Again, she's got, like, the Leia buns. This one is very, like, earthy. Like, it's...
hippie. Woodstock.
Yeah, exactly. It's...
smoke mad blunts and sing the sound of music.
And...
because the hills are alive.
All right. And coming in at number one is her Senate dress from The Phantom Menace. Maybe... This is definitely what she wore when she called for the vote of no confidence.
Casey.
I know, I've said this is the third time I'm saying that, but this is definitely it this time.
I'm Googling it at this point.
No, this is it. This is definitely it.
Vote of no confidence. You are correct. This one is finally it. You were wrong all the other times. There you go.
She's wearing...
you did it.
It looks like horns. Her hair looks like horns. Is how I would describe them.
Yeah. Which, it's weird. For her royal outfits, they really lean... like, Naboo's style is very... reminds me a lot of, like, ancient Oriental in some ways.
I kind of wonder what her look like would have been for the movie if they weren't hiding the reveal that like Padme wasn't always like Natalie Portman.
Yeah.
All right, so that was number one. Honorable mention was the black dress with like the feather headdress that she is wearing as they're escaping Naboo. That didn't qualify because Natalie Portman didn't actually wear it. And then another one, this was only for promos, it wasn't in the movie, but like it's one of the outfits that Keira Knightley is wearing as Padme. So it was a cool look, but it didn't qualify because Natalie Portman didn't wear it in the movie. So that is the top 36 Padme costumes. And I think we're ready to wrap this up.
I think so. It was a long one.
It was. All right, everyone, thank you for listening. You can follow me on Twitter at Darth Hockey. You can follow Krista at Critter, KRI3TE3Rs.
Yeah, 3Ts, E3Rs.
All right, you can follow the podcast at Sith's Giggles Pod. Check us out on iTunes, Spreaker.com, and Google Podcasts. Thanks for listening. Bye.